Welcome to Total Engagement with me, Matt Kuhn, a fan just like you, bringing you all kinds of crazy wrestling stuff. I'm joining you this week from my vacation. I'm in, I guess you'd call it a condo in Myrtle Beach. My son's in the other room trying to get to sleep, but the show must go on, and we've got a ton of exciting stuff. First of all, happy birthday to my son, Matthew. He's 17. Happy birthday, Matthew. He said thanks. And tons of stuff going on this week. We have an interview with two former world champions. Mikey Whipwreck, of course, you remember from ECW. He was the underdog babyface champion who, against all odds, became ECW champion, went to WCW, came back to ECW. You cannot forget Mikey. Plus, Mikey's one hell of a nice guy and a super funny dude, as well as Jerry Lynn. Now, if you watch wrestling, you don't know who Jerry Lynn is. You should probably watch a bit more wrestling. But in addition to his long tenured legendary career, he's currently an agent or producer, or as they call it now, a coach with AEW All Elite Wrestling. And together, along with my friend Mike Freeland, who is a fantastic host, they have a podcast on MLW called Front Row Material. And we did kind of a weird thing this week where we did a crossover. I was on their show, they were on my show, but you know me, if I get wrestlers in front of me, I want to ask some questions, and I definitely do. In addition to that, we're going to talk about something maybe a little controversial. When I was watching Fyter Fest, I made a comment that All Elite Wrestling has made more stars in the last 8 months than WWE has made in the last 8 years, and boy, the reaction of that was something I definitely did not anticipate. And we're going to talk about that. I'm going to back up my case, and I'm going to tell all y'all to calm the hell down. In addition to which, we're going to talk about the follow-up to our special bonus show last week on Bischoff and Heyman going to WWE and taking over Raw and SmackDown, and some thoughts on the Raw and SmackDown this week, as well as Thanos, babyface or heel, you decide. All that and more coming up on our vacation edition, live from Myrtle Beach, of Total Engagement with Matt Kuhn on the MLW Radio Network, partnered with WrestleZone, the most widely read wrestling news site on the planet. And someone tweeted me and said that WrestleZone wasn't, but give me some data, yo. Give me some data. I'll believe what you say. I'm trying to be accurate here. I'm not a journalist, but I'm trying to be accurate here. And if it's not, let me know. But as far as I know, WrestleZone, my buddies over there, are the most widely read news website on the planet. It's Total Engagement with Matt Kuhn. Man, I will tell you what, if there's something that has taken the world by storm, especially in wrestling podcasts, is Blue Chew. And I'll tell you why. It's because it works. And guys, do you remember the days when you were always ready to go? Because we're going to talk about sex, good sex, and you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence up ahead. Just listen up. It's BlueChew.com. Now, you already know that, and of course you know it's blue, just like the color blue. And Blue Chew brings you the first chewable that has the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. Guys, they do work. Ask anybody who's used it. They'll tell you. And they'll also tell you you can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And they're chewable, you know, so they work faster, sometimes twice as fast as a pill. So you can be ready whenever the opportunity arises, if you know what I mean. And let me tell you, it's an awkward thing to say, but I'm in my mid-40s. And a Blue Chew has made a difference in my life, and it's going to make a difference in your life too. And the great thing, I think one of the great things about Blue Chew is, in talking about it, doing advertisements for it, it's taken away a little bit of a silly stigma we may have. But let me tell you, there's no stigma when you take Blue Chew. And if you're one of those guys who could benefit from extra function and more confidence where it counts, Blue Chew is the fast and easy way to enhance your performance. And you know, you can talk a good game, you're going to talk a lot of crap with your girl, but Blue Chew is going to back up that game and help you follow through. Now, how do you get it? It's really easy. It's prescribed online, shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. 2019, y'all. It's fantastic how you can get the things that you need, medical or otherwise. In this case, something you might want and need. So there's no in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, there's no more awkwardness like what I told you earlier. But it's also made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. There's no middleman. So right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners, and I want to ask you to take advantage of this deal, because who doesn't like free? If you've always thought about doing something like this, you've always maybe considered it, but you're like, it's a little silly, or maybe it's a little expensive, give it a shot. It takes just a couple minutes. You go to BlueChew.com and you get your first shipment free when you use your special promo code. Our special promo code is TOTAL. That's TOTAL. You just pay $5 shipping. $5 shipping for a free Blue Chew. Now, again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code TOTAL to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice. And I got to say, thank you, Blue Chew, for sponsoring Total Engagement with Matt Kuhn. Now, before we get started with all of that, I do want to talk about something, a little subject I'm going to call Things I Was Right About This Week. Now, I'm a wrestling fan with opinions, but I've been watching a long time. I'm not really a wrestling insider, but I guess if you're listing a wrestling insider from about 1 to 100, and 1 is like never been inside, doesn't know anything, and 100 is like knows it all, you know, like say Paul Heyman, I'm probably a 5, you know, but I do have some knowledge, I'd say, and some opinions. And here's a couple things I was right about, I believe. Number one, there's a wrestling boom coming. There is, absolutely. And I actually had a debate with Disco Inferno about it, and he doesn't believe it, but I think some of the proof is I was closer to estimating what the Double or Nothing buy-ins would be, or Double or Nothing pay-per-view numbers would be, than he was. He thought my number was ridiculous, and I did overshoot it, but I was a little bit closer. But I think the real indication of the wrestling boom is that the idea that AEW is going to push McMahon to do things he normally wouldn't do to increase the level of his product was evidenced very firmly this week. Number one, getting Heyman and Bischoff. Now, I'm still not sure how the Bischoff thing works out. I put my prediction in last week, which is that I think Bischoff's probably going to last about 3 months. Paul Heyman's going to last about 9 months, and Triple H will take over about a year from now. I'm not in that camp where I think this whole conspiracy theory about it. I just think that's just the way it's going to work out. Now, once again, people tweeted Eric and tweeted Conrad and said, Matt Kuhn said that Bischoff won't last 3 months. It's not because I don't think he's good enough. It's not because I don't think he's going to do anything wrong. I just don't think it's a winnable situation. I don't think Vince is going to be able to back off. And I think the issue is going to be pressed, and then I think it will be exposed that perhaps the time is right to replace Vince altogether. And when that happens, Hunter's going to want to bring in his own people. I know when I took over certain businesses, I brought in my own people, and that's usually the way it works. But that being said, things are happening. We saw Raw this week. Raw was a very changed product. We haven't seen any changes with SmackDown yet because Bischoff isn't going to take over SmackDown for a while, but I think till after Extreme Rules. But I think we saw what can happen with Raw when Heyman gets the control, and more is going to be done as the ratings continue to slide, and I guess they stopped sliding this week. And AEW is going to catch fire. They're going to get decent ratings, at least decent ratings, probably good ratings. It's going to push WWE up, and in quality as well as ratings. And a lot of people say the casual wrestling fan or the lapsed wrestling fan. I like to say the dormant wrestling fan, the wrestling fan that checks in once in a while. There's so many of them out there. Also, the idea that if Raw gets 2 million viewers every week, that it's not the same 2 million. I think when we see numbers such as the YouTube subscribers and the overall network subscriber numbers, I think there is a dormant wrestling fan, a rotating wrestling fan as well. And when you collate all those people, I don't think that's the right word, when you collect all those people together, you're going to have a decent number. It's like when Nitro came out and the wrestling audience increased immediately. Where do those people come from? And when Nitro goes away, those wrestling fans left and never came back. So there is, I believe, a dormant wrestling fan. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I know some secret wrestling fans, like adults who will come up to me and go, Oh, Matt, you do podcasting, huh? And I'm like, yeah. How'd you know? Oh, I don't know. I just kind of, and they start talking to me about Braun Strowman or some shit. And I'm just like, this is a wrestling fan who checks in once in a while. And I believe once the product increases and gets a little less embarrassing and a little more creative and a little more cool, then the adults are going to tell other adults about it. And most importantly, they're going to get their kids to watch it. Right now, we don't have a lot of kids watching wrestling. I've been at takeovers with my son where he was the only kid there. But the demos this week from Raw showed that increased teenager viewership. And I was talking to my son about this, and I believe the reason is teenagers, younger people, are more plugged into social media. So that particular lapsed fan or rotating fan or dormant fan is the type that checks in once in a while, watches the GIFs, watches the YouTube. But when something happens off screen, something political, like it happened this week, but something that took fire on social media, the kids are gonna take notice and the kids are gonna watch. So I believe as it increases, as the creativity and as the ratings and as the creativity, sorry, I'm on vacation, as the creativity increases, as the coolness factor goes up, as AEW keeps pressing and pressing WWE, they're going to up their game and we're going to see a wrestling boom. Now, it's not going to be this month. I get tweets from idiots who say, "Where's the wrestling boom now?" I never said it was going to be now. Pay attention. So that's one thing I was right about. Another thing I was right about is I've been saying a lot, more than once, more than twice, more than three times, that why, and asking a lot, why don't people gimmick chairs? And this week we saw what I think is the first gimmicked metal chair we've ever seen. Now, it didn't really work. And I think they gimmicked the seat, and then poor Cody was hit with the top of it. I'm not sure if we want to go around hitting people with chairs. I'm not a wrestler. As a fan, I don't really need it. But I definitely tweeted that when that happened, I said, there's no way AEW is going to do an unprotected chair shot. That must have been a gimmick chair. Now, Blue Meanie, who I do consider a friend, was saying it sounded like a real chair because he ended up getting hit with a top part. But Blue Meanie also said he Zap-rooted it and said that, meaning he looked at it frame by frame, and it seemed like the chair was bent before the hit, and it was a gimmick chair, and Tony Khan pretty much just straight admitted that. That's another thing I was right about this week. I'm not right about things all the time, but those were a couple things. Now, the biggest topic I want to talk about this week is, has AEW created more stars in the last 8 months, which is to me from where it all in started, in more than WWE's created in the last 8 years? I'm gonna make the argument to that, but first, something a little fun. I want to talk about Thanos. Now, everybody is watching the Marvel Cinematic Universe and watch it all the way through Endgame. Now, not everybody did, I imagine, but a lot of people did, and I know it's really the height of storytelling to have these 20 movies turn into one movie, which made sense. There's not a lot, of course, you can read into as much as you want, but there's not a lot of plot holes or conflicts in characters. It really worked really well. But the one thing that got me was this character Thanos. Now, Thanos is the heel in the whole thing. If you want to look at it in wrestling parlance, he's the bad guy. All these good guys come together. But is Thanos really, really a heel? Like, what it motivates him? So if you don't like Marvel, just fast forward. But I'm firmly in the camp that Thanos is a good guy, is the baby face. And I'm going to tell you why. He's motivated by making the world a better place, by making it the existence of beings, maybe not human beings, the existence of beings, stay with me here, perpetuate. And he saw that the resources in the universe were running out. And he took great pride in the fact that one of the planets where he did happen to kill half the people was thriving. People had full bellies. They were happy, maybe not happy, but they were going to survive much longer than they would have if he hadn't done that. Now, of course, that strikes a little genocide-ish, I'm just saying, I'm not pro-genocide, but I will say that it's not done based on race. It's not done based on age. It's not done based on class. Thanos completely randomly killed half the people. He even said rich or poor alike, young and old alike. You know, he randomly killed half the people. What was his purpose in doing so? So that the universe could survive. Now, I know what you're thinking. A lot of bad people think that they're doing the right thing. But in this case, isn't it though? Aren't we running out of resources? I know. But stay with me here. If we're running out of resources, then the beings on these certain planets, including our own, would run out of resources at a certain time. But by making the tough decisions, as he said, the things that he's strong enough to do, by, you know, getting rid of half the people randomly. I know it's sad. You miss your uncle, you miss your aunt, maybe your mom, maybe your dad, maybe your sister, brother, kid. It's terrible. I get it. But mankind would live for longer, based on the fact that there were enough resources for everybody. Now, of course, the kids I work with say, why doesn't he double the resources? That's a great question. I don't have the answer to that. But maybe he was just so single-minded. Couple more things about Thanos being a babyface. Just saying. One is, he sacrificed the only thing he loved. What kind of bad guy sacrifices what he loved for the greater benefit of everybody else? He selflessly sacrificed the one thing he loved, his daughter, to meet his goal. It wasn't an evil goal. It was a goal to make beings perpetuate and to live on longer and longer than they would without his interference. Now, he's got a little bit of a God complex, I'll give you that. But I'm not sure if he's wrong, number one. And number two, sacrificing the only thing he loved to make this thing happen? That doesn't sound like a bad guy to me. Finally, what did Thanos do after he did it, after he did the snap? By the way, I did watch Infinity War for like the third time this weekend, so this kind of spurred this on. But what did Thanos do after he did the snap? He took in a sunset. What kind of bad guy takes in a sunset? He knew what he had to do. He wasn't happy about it, but he knew it had to get done. So that is why I am pontificating and I'm putting forth the notion, I want you to just think about it open-mindedly, that Thanos was the babyface. The Avengers are the heels. They're trying to stop him, selfishly thinking of their own interests, selfishly thinking of the love they have for those immediately around them versus what's good for the generations to come while Thanos is making the hard choices. Thanos, babyface, Avengers, heels. All right, coming up, we have our interview this week. I don't do interviews every week. I just do interviews when I want to do interviews. And when I had the opportunity to interview two former world champions at the same time, two really funny guys, two really good guys, smart guys, funny guys, like Mikey Whipwreck and Jerry Lynn, I jumped at the opportunity. Of course, my good friend Mike Freeland is the host of their podcast on the MLW Radio Network. It's called Front Row Material. You got to check it out. If you like silly, over-the-top, sometimes profane comedy, but also some of the best wrestling stories ever. Mikey and Jerry are there for you. Of course, Mikey, former world champion, early days of ECW. Jerry Lynn, world champion for ECW towards the end days. And also, of course, TNA, X Division champion, as well as WWE light heavyweight champion. And not to mention his global days and the fact he's Jerry fucking Lynn. And also with Jerry, he's a coach with AEW. And he was actually, I found out, the agent / coach for the John Moxley Joey Janela match. So we talk about that. We get into some barbed wire stories. They're a great team as far as podcasting, so check out Front Row Material. But before you do that, listen to this great interview we have with Jerry Lynn and Mikey Whipwreck here on Total Engagement. Well, guys, today on Total Engagement, we have a treat. We have two former world champions, Mikey Whipwreck and Jerry Lynn. I give them a big introduction, but you know who they are. And they also have a podcast on here with me on the MLW Network, Front Row Material. Mikey, Jerry, how are you guys doing today?
I'm doing great.
I'm doing fat.
So, for those of you...
Let me change that. I'm doing old.
For those of you who have trouble discerning, Jerry is the one with the serious, deep voice, and Mikey's the one with the unserious, higher voice, so we can tell the difference.
Okay. I got to get deeper.
Well, all right.
So you guys have a really fun podcast on MLW, Front Row Material. It's not the most formatted podcast, but I think it's just based on the fact you guys are good friends. And I think what you said, Jerry, is when you were approached about doing a podcast, you said, I'll do one, but I'll do it only if I can do it with Mikey. What is it about Mikey that makes you want to do a podcast with him?
Well, he's one of the few that I actually have kept in touch with all these years, you know, on a regular basis. So, and every time we got together, even on the road, we just had a blast. So, and if I did a podcast, I wanted it to be fun.
And you guys do have a lot of fun, Mikey. Like, there's really nothing off limits as far as humor or inappropriateness or anything, but you guys tell some great wrestling stories as well. You've been doing the podcast for a while, Mikey. Have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, it gives me something to look forward to. I'm supposed to get up in the morning, go to work, come home. You know, once, twice a week, we get to goof off a little bit and just have fun.
And, of course, Mikey and Jerry, we both know from their ECW days. And also, of course, Mikey did some WCW. Jerry did some TNA and WWE and a whole bunch of stuff. But, Jerry, you are a coach/agent with AEW now. How exciting a situation is that for you to be part of something that's so grassroots, that's really catching on? It feels like the beginning of something exciting. That must be fun for you.
It is. It's very exciting. And whenever I'm at one of the shows, I'm as fired up as everyone else. And, you know, it's always exciting to be part of something that's just starting from the ground floor up, you know, and trying to help create something.
And Mikey, you know, with this AEW thing, I think, and I should say that I was the guest on Front Row Material this week, so this is the greatest crossover in podcast history. We both come out on Wednesdays, and I think I asked you this, I asked Jerry this when I was on your show, but do you see any similarities, Mikey, between the kind of grassroots, you know, people's organization of AEW in 2019 and ECW back in the 90s?
Oh, yeah. Very similar. In ECW, we had, you know, Terry Funk and a lot of the guys that, you know, were, you know, on top at different places, and then guys who never got a break. You know, I think it's very similar with Cody. He was up top, and he wasn't happy with where he was, so he moved out on his own. The Bucks went out, and, you know, they had their issues with people, you know, stupidly, in my opinion, but that's a whole other story. But it's the same thing. They have something to prove. You know, they're all gung-ho, and knowing the way they are, they're going to hit a home run.
And what's different, too, is they're snatching up indie talent that's amazing and awesome that no other major companies would probably – they're probably not even on their radar, and they're giving them a chance. And behind the scenes, too, it's got a great feel. It's like a big team effort, everyone's having a great time.
Well, let's talk.
Very ECW-like from what I've heard. The camaraderie in the locker room and stuff.
Yeah. How much different is that, Jerry? Because the camaraderie's there, but also the boys, as you guys say, are the ones running the company. How different is that from ECW, where pretty much Paul is the Svengali really motivating everybody?
Well, I guess the only difference is there's a few more at the top here. But they're all doing it together as a team. And, well, I guess Paulie always was open to everyone else, too. That's one thing that's similar is they're open to everyone's ideas, and they give everyone freedom in the ring to paint their own picture.
AEW has money.
There you go.
If you were going to, Mikey, pick, because we're talking about, you know, the Bucks and Cody, and even Christopher Daniels is executive vice president. And one reason that I'm so in the corner of AEW is I've been behind the scenes a bit and seen these guys work and seen the passion and see the dedication. If you were to take it back to the ECW days, Mikey, like, who would you think would have the wherewithal to do what the Bucks and Cody do as far as business-wise, motivation, inspiring themselves, inspiring others, as far as starting a company? Can you think of anybody?
Tommy Dreamer. And I guess he's done it, actually, with House of Hardcore, I guess. Yeah, but I saw a picture the Bucks posted either today or recently they posted it, of them with their merchandise van and them unloading the van and setting up their stuff.
Right.
I mean, they did that themselves. At this point, they could very easily have, hey, unload the van and move it. But they did it themselves. You know, they just love the business.
And that hands-on approach has to be enticing and inspiring for everybody else, right, Jerry? Because I've seen that too. I've seen the Bucks do some very minutia related work that they didn't have to do. It must set a good example for everybody else, huh?
Exactly. And that, to me, that's what makes a great, well, you could say boss or whatever, but people who are in charge. I think you get the respect of all your employees by leading by example.
And as far as this talent you talked about earlier, you know, giving newer talent a chance to rise, this is where I kind of got in some debates with people online, and I think it's really the most interesting facet of AEW is giving these wrestlers a bigger platform. Let's talk a little bit about some of the newer talent that maybe even I haven't heard of. I didn't know much about Darby Allin. My son did, but I was super impressed, Jerry. Tell me a little bit about Darby Allin.
Well, I'd seen some of his stuff before I even met him on YouTube, because I'll channel surf on YouTube and just see what's going on out there and try and keep up to date with certain people and stuff. And I found out that he had been a big skateboarder. And I think he was death-defying just in the skateboarding. So I guess wrestling just sort of, it gelled with him very well.
And as far as his wrestling style, like he's along the same lines as a lot of these other guys we've seen in AEW, size-wise and style-wise, but what is it that makes him a little bit different? You know, I think like the gimmick of the half, you know, the half paint on the face, but also he's kind of an innovator. He reminds me maybe a little bit of you. Are you seeing any of that with him in the ring?
Oh, yeah. He's got his own unique style with the way he, you know, moves around in the ring and does certain spots and stuff. And he also, talking to him, he wants to not just go out there and do all these spots and stuff, but he wants to create moments.
Well, he certainly did. Did you happen to see him wrestle Mikey, Darby Allin, and Cody?
Yeah.
What did you think of him?
He's a sick fuck. I mean, the thing, like, he's innovative, and the thing is, it's not, he's not just doing stuff to do stuff. With the stuff he was doing, it kind of made sense, and kind of all fit together. So I was impressed with it. Yeah. I mean, that bump on the apron. I mean, look, I'm not one to say, you know, that was stupid, you know, because I've done plenty of stupid things in my day. But man, geez, I was like, woo. From a guy who would take stupid bumps, I was like, wow. He trumped me. Oh, did I say Trump? Shit.
Now, how about that, Jerry? How open are these younger guys? You know, you've got not just Darby Allin, but you've got Joey Janela, you know, and you've got some of these other, you know, even the Bucks or Phoenix and Pentagon. Is it your place, or is it something they're open to for a guy like you to kind of come up and go, hey, listen, man, I was where you were a few years ago, and maybe we should save that, or maybe we shouldn't do that at all? Or are you trusting these guys' judgment as far as that big, I think they call it a coffin drop on the apron and things like that?
Oh, no, I'll give them advice like that here and there, you know, if we've got time and whatever. But and anyone I've talked to has been very receptive. Actually, the first time I talked to Darby, we talked for quite a while, and it was at a convention. So, yeah, all the guys are open to, you know.
Was that at WrestleMania, Jerry?
Was it?
Was that at WrestleCon?
I think it was.
Yeah, I think he blew me off.
No, I don't. Mikey.
Here we go with the convention.
Mikey, my name is Jerry Lynn, and I'm going to blow you.
Okay, I'm better.
Out of the water.
Jerry, that's a funny thing, because that is a line that was in that Page movie, Fighting for My Family. Do you think that was a direct hit, like, not maybe a direct rib or direct thing on you, or was it coincidental that it was the Jerry Lynn name they used there?
No, I think it was a rib. There's no one else in the business named Jerry Lynn. But I thought it was a great rib. It made me laugh. But the thing is, even if I knew who did it, there's no way I could give them a receipt that would top that.
Right. Yeah, it's hard to beat nationwide opening movie for a rib, right, Mikey?
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one to beat.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting your guys' first reaction to something that happened recently. And I know with Jerry, you working for a different company, it might be a little hard to say. But Mikey, and I'll ask both of you, what's your first reaction when you hear that your old boss, your old friend, Paul Heyman, now has a position of creative executive for Raw? What was your first reaction when you heard that?
Cool.
Well, it didn't really surprise me, but the first thing that came to mind is whatever he comes up with, I'm sure Vince will still have to approve or disapprove.
Yeah, that's going to be the hard part. How much creative is he actually going to have?
Is Paul, Mikey, do you think Paul's at a place now where he can work in a situation like that? Because I know before there were some issues with him and Stephanie and issues with him taking so much pride in the ECW name. Is Paul at a place now where if Vince doesn't step back, he can be like, okay, sure. Or is he still that guy who's going to say, excuse me, sir, let me volley that back to you real quick?
I think he could probably that part of his personality for a while. But I think Vince keeps saying, no. The Paulie Dangerous is going to come out. It's got to be inevitable. And if not, I'll be very upset, very disappointed.
Jerry, there was some talk that, like, when Paul, you know, Paul Heyman didn't surprise many people. Eric Bischoff surprised a few people. But in your world, were those people that, Bischoff and Heyman, were those people that maybe you might have looked forward to working to in AEW down the road? Or did you not see those two as being names that were going to be used in the future? Or do you have any idea?
I have no idea. And right now, I don't know. Right now, the way I see AEW and what they're doing with the social media and the way they market and stuff, they're so creative. So I think they're fine right now as is the way they are.
Yeah, it seems like they have all the pieces in place. Overall, as someone who worked the recent Fyter Fest, I loved it. I enjoyed it a lot. What was your role in Fyter Fest, if you can talk about it?
I coached the main event, Janela and Moxley.
Okay, so that was an insane match. That was something I don't think had been seen by an audience that wide in a very long time. Did that take you back to the ECW days when maybe you're watching craft people put together the boards with the barbed wire? Did it kind of take you back a little bit?
Oh, it took me back to a lot of companies I've worked for. I've worked, you know, ECW. I worked for ECW a couple times. I've worked for IWA Mid-South quite a few times where I would be the only normal match on the show. The rest was all barbed wire and light tubes and everything.
That's what I found, Jerry, so surprising that you coached that match.
Well,
one of the best technical wrestlers I've ever seen in year two of the hardcore barbed wire death match.
Yeah, but it can still be done right. You can still have a big blow-off death match and still have some rhyme or reason to it instead of walking around and having to rearrange the furniture match, you know?
Yeah, no, it was definitely well put together.
What's the difference, Mikey, in a well-put-together death match? I mean, I don't know if you call it a death match, but a well-put-together hardcore match like that and a shitty hardcore match. Like, what's the difference that maybe you would notice technically, but a fan wouldn't notice?
A shitty hardcore match is just doing shit just to do it. A good hardcore match has a little psychology behind it. You tease things. You like I told Jerry, you set it and forget it, and different things like that. But there's definitely good hardcore matches, and there's definitely shitty hardcore matches. And believe me, I would know because I've had my fair share of shitty hardcore matches.
Like one example is I've seen so many hardcore matches where these guys will clock each other with a chair or something over and over and over. And just one good one, and if you sell it, you'll get a lot more meaning out of it. But you get, if you just keep clocking each other over and over and over, and there's no selling, well, the people aren't going to care about your well-being because there's no repercussions to being hit with that stuff. When in all actuality, it does hurt, and it does do a little bit of irreparable damage to your body.
I think a great example of that in that match is that they used the piece of plywood with the barbed wire on it, you know, and then when they pulled up the second one, the fans reacted as much or more than the first one. It hadn't been worn out. People were still invested as to they did not want to see somebody get hurt on that barbed wire. Jerry, what is working with, you know, of course, Dean Ambrose is a veteran who's coming for WWE. Janela is someone I've had, my son's had great interactions with. Really good kid, really energetic, creative guy. What was that experience like coaching that match? I guess that's what you would call in the past, agenting that match, or I think there was another word for it before, but now we're calling it coach. What was that experience like for you?
I was excited. I found out they both asked for me. So, but I after I asked them, I said, no, don't, you know, I said, feel free to ask me anytime in the future if you don't think I was a big pain in the butt. And they said, no, because everything I inputted into the match, I would explain to them why. I wouldn't just shoot down an idea or something or say, we really need to do it this way without explaining why.
You know, you joked about it earlier, Mikey. It's an interesting choice to have Jerry coach that particular match, but it kind of makes sense in a way, too, because he might add the voice of reason, the level-headedness to it. Are there other reasons you could think why Jerry would be a great coach for that kind of match?
Jerry's just always had a good mind for putting things together and just pacing things, except for chain wrestling in the beginning. I really can't stand that, but that's a whole different story entirely. But Jerry's always been very good at it. Very, like, when we go over matches, we never argued about anything. You know what I mean? And if I came up with something, he goes, ah. Like he said, he would say no, but he would say, well, this is why I don't like that. I go, oh, okay, it makes sense. So Jerry's just very good at psychology and putting things together. And I think he probably sees this stuff in his head, and he can kind of see it in his head as they're talking about it, and he can kind of see how it's going to go. So I just knowing him the way I know him, it didn't surprise me at all.
And I've done quite a few hardcore matches on the indies. So not a lot for TV, but on the indies, that, you know, after ECW's done and everything, so when people bring in, well, here's a former ECW guy, let's put him in a hardcore match.
Yeah!
Hey, tell me, Mikey, do you have a good barbed wire story? A story about you with barbed wire? I'm sure you do.
Well, I remember we were doing NYWC and we did like a cycle circuits, which is kind of like a war games with like half a cage, half the rings of barbed wire. It's a big clusterfuck, really. And I was being a heel, and I was never very good at being a heel because people always just seemed to like me. And I tried to like free sink and kind of get tangled up in barbed wire.
Oh, no.
But I tangled myself up in the barbed wire so much. And here I am a heel, right? And nobody would come near me. So I wrap myself into, because if I'm a baby face, okay, well, the heels have to feed, right?
Right.
Well, I'm a heel, and the baby face is like, well, fuck it. So I'm now in the middle of the ring trying to do stuff. I'm tangled up, I can't move. I'm over for like 10 minutes trying to get this barbed wire off, and nobody comes anywhere near me.
I'm like, hell. I wouldn't come near you either.
Oh, yeah. It hurt. I was all scratched up and cut up, and it for no reason whatsoever.
Hey, you remind me of that Cannibal Corpse song. Is it something like Mummified in Barbed Wire or something?
Well, that was me.
Yep. But
it seemed like an eternity.
No. I did a.
Oh, go ahead.
When I was going to AAW every month for a few years, I was in a big angle with Jimmy Jacobs. And I show up the one month and I go, okay, what are we doing? And he says, well, this is Danny Daniels. He says, "You're going to be in a Stairway to Hell match." I go, "What is that?" And he says, "Well, we're going to have a ladder, and there's going to be a little a spool of barbed wire at the top of the hanging above the ring, and whoever gets it first can use it." And I'm like, I'm right away, I'm thinking, I don't want to mess with barbed wire. But we were pretty safe with it, and I hung him in the tree of woe and put the barbed wire around his face, and then put a chair in front of it and baseball slid it, but the finish was, of course, I had to give him the stupid cradle pile driver on the barbed wire. So he was fine. I took care of him, but it destroyed my tights and poked a bunch of holes in my butt.
There was a joke there, but I'm not going to say.
Go ahead.
No, I'm not going to say.
Oh, darn.
Well, I can't thank you guys enough for being here. I wanted to just talk to you guys about whatever came to mind, of course, the recent happenings, but I want everybody to check out Front Row Material, and your good friend Mike Freeland is the host. I think Mike's a great host. Tell us a little bit about Mike, Mikey.
I would say he's a great friend. He's more like an acquaintance.
Oh, well, there you go.
He's a furry.
He's a furry.
A furry or a fuzzy? A furry?
A fuzzy. The convention would be with the Mickey Mouse outfit.
And if he could, he would live on pickles.
And he farts in the air.
And he's obsessed with Ric Flair's baby arm.
He really is.
It took a Scorpio as well.
Yes.
Mike's
a good guy. We bust him out, give him a hard time. But yeah, the whole podcast is because of him.
Yeah, he's the one who asked me in the first place.
I think he ripped us. I think he said, you know, Jerry, Mikey said he'll do it if you'll do it. And he told me, you know, Mikey, Jerry said he'll do it if you do it.
He may have. You never know. Well, now, Mike's a great guy, and he's a great co-host.
He's fantastic, and it would take a unique individual because this is about as controlled as I've ever heard you two together, you know, mainly because I'm asking you the questions one at a time. Mikey, what are you up to these days? I know you're training wrestlers. How do people get a hold of you? How do people reach out to you on social media?
I am at Mikey Whipwreck. With the underline thing at the end. I forget what it's called. On Twitter. And then that's pretty much it. Not really doing much. I have my wrestling school, Underdogs, up in Hazleton, PA. And that's really it. Helping NYWC once a month with their shows.
Until next Girl Scout cookie season, then you'll really be busy.
We're not going to talk about that. I have money.
How about next soccer season?
Oh, we're in full preparation for soccer. Well, I'm a soccer coach, U9 division. I'm a Girl Scout cookie dad thing, whatever they call them. I don't know.
Den mother.
Den mother.
How many kids do you have, Mikey?
A lot.
A lot.
Five.
A lot.
Five. Five kids.
So you're out there selling the cookies at wrestling shows? Is that the thing?
No. Lowe's. Is it Lowe's?
And Stop and Shop, Walmart.
Oh, God.
You know, I've never seen that.
If you go back and listen to the archives of our podcast, you know, I have all kinds of stories about the cookies and the cookie booths and my dog with no balls. It's
and the hot dog wagon at the soccer meetings.
The hot dog wagon at the soccer meetings.
I definitely heard Jerry teasing you about being a den mother, but I got to be honest, I've seen the people selling cookies out there. I've never seen a dude out there. You'd be the first dude I saw, the first male den mother of all time.
Let's put it this way. When your 8-year-old daughter says to you, "Daddy, I have to sell 500 boxes of cookies so I can go on the Girl Scout trip to the Philadelphia Zoo." Son of a bitch, he's going to sell 500 cookies if it kills me.
Yeah, you're not kidding. You're not kidding.
I put them on Twitter. Buy a box of cookies. I'll autograph them.
Jerry.
Well, we had to sell these pastries for Annabelle's band fundraiser. And so at work, I think we sold over 60 of them or something like that. And when I went and picked them up, they were shocked that, I mean, we sold the most. And when I went to go pick them up, she says, "What do you work at, Nissan?" And I'm like, "No, I used to wrestle and I threatened everyone at work."
Jerry,
threatened to irk your boss.
If people need to get a hold of you, people want to find out what you're up to, how can people reach out to you on social media?
At It's Jerry Lynn.
And you See, are
again with the easy Twitter handle. Like I read myself.
You are relatively you're relatively new to Twitter, right, Jerry?
Yes, and I'm still learning. It's like a part-time job. It's crazy.
It is. How, and have you caught up to Mikey's followers yet?
Have I, Mikey? I don't know. What is?
Oh, you're way ahead of me. You're way. Yeah.
No, I can't be.
You are. I'm telling you, you are.
You are.
Well, I suck at Twitter. Apparently, I need to come up with more entertaining shit.
Yeah, you are entertaining.
When I first started Twitter, I was like, I'll follow Mikey Ripwreck. And I was like, oh, he follows me. And then I realized Mikey follows everybody. You follow every not single anymore. Person.
Not anymore. Fuck that. I don't care if they like you or not. Yeah, you can't. You go on your Twitter feed, and by the time you look at something, you try to go find it again.
It's gone.
It's 75 miles down the page. I go, fuck
it's
this.
It's in the Twitter universe. Floating out into space.
I rib myself. I try to be nice and follow people. Say, hey, this will be nice. Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, the first communication that I ever had with Mikey, I can't repeat exactly what it said, but it was about a Justin Credible interview, and it was literally the first thing Mikey ever said to me, and I can't repeat it, but I'll never forget my first interaction with Mikey, and I'll never forget this interview. Jerry and Mikey, thank you for joining me here on Total Engagement. Check them out at Front Row Material Podcast on the MLW Network. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. I hope you had a good time.
Well, thanks. Thank you, Matt. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate it.
Well, there you have it. There's Mikey Ripwreck and Jerry Lynn. What a pleasure having two former world champions. I never take it for granted, even though I've talked to Mikey a bit by DM. I've met Jerry twice. I still don't think he knows who I am. But he's the nicest guy. It's the funniest thing about Jerry is that when you go to wrestling, you know, you see a wrestling convention, you see like, you know, Glacier, or you see One Man Gang, or you see whoever. And then you see Jerry Lynn, who just looks like a dude. He just looks like a guy. Like, he doesn't look like a plumber or anything. He looks like a guy who owns a landscape business or something. He looks like a successful, normal dude. It's kind of funny. But he was one of the great all-time wrestlers. And Mikey Ripwreck is one of the funniest guys I know. And also one of the pivotal figures in the history of ECW. It's my honor to interview them. So now, the subject at hand. Has AEW created more stars in the last 8 months than WWE has created in the last 8 years? That was my tweet. It got a lot of play. And by the way, like I said before, I don't just put shit out there just to put it out there. I put shit out there because I feel it and I mean it and I will defend it. But before I do, let's talk about people freaking out about shit like this, because nothing is more stupid than if somebody says something that benign. It's an opinion. And people freaking out about it and being so defensive about it and not understanding that it's an opinion. It's not like, go fuck yourself, Matt, because you like AEW. Also, I'm tough on WWE, not because I don't like WWE. I love WWE. I've been watching WWE since I was, I don't even want to say, but like 35 years, guys. So I'm a fan, obviously. It's a lot like when you're a fan of a sports team. Like, I've been a Cubs fan ever since I was a kid. And you'd be like, God damn it, I wish they would fire the general manager. I wish they would get someone to bat cleanup who's a little bit better. They need to shore up their starting rotation. They paid too much for this guy. It's no different. Just because you criticize something, it doesn't mean you don't like it. It just means you want it to be better. You like wrestling. You want it to be as good as it can be. So, number one, first of all, don't freak out, Stans. It's okay that you love WWE. And it's okay. It doesn't mean just because I criticize it, I need to stop watching, as some people would say. It's also, on top of that, it's okay to criticize something that you like. It doesn't mean you don't like it. It means you want it to be successful. You want it to be as good as it can. For me, it takes a different form. I want it to be successful for the people that work there, for the wrestlers that are there, and I want it to be around for a long time. So when I criticize WWE, that's where I come from. When I criticize or when I boost up AEW, that's where I come from. I'm giving you my honest opinion. I'm not a hater. I'm not a homer. I'm not a consultant, you know, like some people may be. I am just a fan. So, did WWE create more stars in the did AEW create more stars in the last 8 months than WWE did in the last 8 years? Fuck yes, they have. And let me explain why. Because WWE is not in the business of creating stars. It's not what they do. It's specifically the opposite of what they say they do. I don't know if you remember a guy. I know I do. And I think he's going to make headlines again. Super nice guy. Super talented guy. His name is Ryback. Love Ryback. I think he's the greatest. He's awesome. Great guy. Great, good, great wrestler. Made a huge impact in a very short time. And Ryback said he had conversations with people high up in WWE, as high up as it goes, to say there will be no John Cena's again. There will be no one bigger than the company. They do not want to create stars. In the context of how big the WWE is, which is a billion-dollar corporation, when you went to WrestleMania or you ordered WrestleMania, you did not WrestleMania. You did not go. I know I didn't. I know anybody I talked to didn't go for stars, for people. They went for the brand. The WWE created three stars over the last 8 years. Three stars. They created Brock Lesnar, who pretty much created himself. John Cena, who was a happy accident. But the biggest star the WWE has created over the last 8 years has been the WWE. They'll tell you that. We know it. They don't create stars. Now, again, it's in the context of this billion-dollar company. When we talk about, you know, the Saudi Arabia shows, without getting into all that, it's about the Saudi Arabia show. What's going to happen there? You'll find out because you're following WWE. When we have WrestleMania, what do we go see? We're going to see WrestleMania, the spectacle. There's no stars. There's nobody above the marquee. There's no Hulk Hogan's. There's no Rock's. There's nobody like that. It's the company. They don't create stars. So three stars. Cena, Lesnar, and the WWE. Now, if you're going to say Roman Reigns, you might make that case because Roman is a guy that they really pushed and pushed and pushed. But at the same time, did Roman break out? No, he didn't. Not at all. And it was pretty much their fault. They pushed him in a way where he could have broken out, but fans are a little too... they're a little too aware now of the devices used to push people. Daniel Bryan could have been a huge star. Daniel Bryan took off on his own. What did they do? They squashed it. Zack Ryder took off on his own using the internet, using YouTube. What did they do? Squash it. Rusev Day, squashed. They not only do not create stars, but they are specifically trying to take people who create their own star and squash it. It's specifically why Cody left. Cody left to become a star. Cody left WWE to become a star. And he did become a star. The Young Bucks are stars. Now, we're talking in the context of AEW. They have become bigger stars because of AEW. SCU, they are stars in the context of AEW. They are bigger than the company. Now, AEW is not a multi, is not a billion-dollar company the way WWE is. So in that context, they have created stars on top of that. Not only that, here's the important thing. We now know names of guys we didn't know before. Now, a few of us knew who Joey Janela was, but now a lot of people knew who Joey Janela was. Darby Allin, guess what just happened? He became a star. He's a bigger name than AEW. And you know who else became a star? Jungle Boy and MJF. And also Orange Cassidy. These are names getting out into the ether that weren't there before. Now, again, you might say, well, Seth Rollins, people know who Seth Rollins is. But again, he's not bigger than the company. Specifically, if he did take off in a way they didn't want, they would squash it. He is not a star in the context of the WWE. And, you know, don't get me started on the whole Rollins Osprey thing, because they made peace and, you know, Rollins admitted that sometimes he's a little stubborn on Twitter. But the fact of the matter is, kids today know who the WWE is. Every single kid knows who the WWE is. Nobody knows who Seth Rollins is. Very, very few people know who Roman Reigns is. People know who Brock Lesnar is. People know who John Cena is. Now, if you were to talk about All Elite Wrestling, nobody would know who All Elite Wrestling is. But now, more and more people are aware of the Bucks, Cody, Kenny Omega, who was not a star in the U.S. and is a star now. Now, I know a lot of people are going to say, Matt, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I'm also talking about people who have the potential to become stars as well. So maybe they're not stars at this moment, but they've created stars. We just haven't made them stars yet. So I hope that makes sense to you. I hope that explains my viewpoint on this. That number one, WWE doesn't create stars. Number two, AEW is not bigger than the names it has. And number three, there's a lot of new names out there that we didn't have before. And number four, some of these people that are stars, we're going to find out they're stars. I think a few of them are out there and you're going to find out. So that's my viewpoint. Now, on top of that, I could be wrong. And guess what, guys? It's okay because it's just wrestling. Thank you for tuning in to Total Engagement with Matt Kuhn this week. Sorry I couldn't get into it too much this week, but once again, I'm on vacation and I'm doing my podcast from a desk in a condo and moved all my equipment here. So I hope you enjoyed the show, and we're going to bring you an extra special show next week on Total Engagement with me, Matt Kuhn, on the MLW Radio Network, partnered with WrestleZone, the most widely read wrestling news site on the planet.